Good morning. Just kidding. Good afternoon. Want to make sure you're still with me. Thank you all so much for coming and supporting this panel. I also thank my colleagues for the great work they're doing. As immigrant health becomes more visible in our nation, I think it's important that we have the right people on the ground telling the stories, telling it with compassion, but also with confidence. And so thank you for coming and supporting this panel. Thank you to my colleagues for the good work that you are doing. As Dr. Gee mentioned, I am very passionate about this project, and hopefully that passion will be conveyed throughout my 12 minutes. But this project is not, I'm not at the helm of it by myself. I have great colleagues back at the Center for Health Equity and Wellness, Dr. Washington, Mr. Pescara, and Dr. Link, who have done a great job in working with me to bring this project to light. To dot our I's and cross our T's, I have no relationships to disclose. To give you a bit of information about Adventist Healthcare Center for Health Equity and Wellness, we are based just outside of Washington, D.C. in a Maryland suburb called Gaithersburg, Maryland, and we're a faith-based nonprofit organization that focuses on improving the health of our underserved communities, looking at health equity, looking at eliminating disparities, but also promoting wellness and health through our five focus areas of community health and outreach, so through wellness and screening initiatives, community benefit, giving back to the community in meaningful ways, and to organizations that are doing things to improve the health of the communities, looking at health ministries through churches, both Adventist and non-Adventist within the communities that we serve, our health programs and deliveries such as maternal and child health, cardiovascular health, diabetes education, and so on. And then research and education, which I've highlighted because that's the area under which Project BEAT IT falls. Looking at Washington, D.C. specifically, one of the largest African immigrant population hubs in the U.S., there's about 11% of the African immigrant population that contributes to the total immigrant population in the D.C. area, and they're mainly clustered in Montgomery County and Prince George's Counties, which are the catchment areas for Adventist healthcare. Montgomery County is the home of our corporate office in the Washington, D.C. area, and so it's appropriate that this project was housed with us. Generally speaking, African immigrants are very well educated. They often come to this country seeking their second or third degree, or in my dad's case, his fourth, but we won't go into that. And they also are able to have jobs usually that provide them with access to health care in some form. Nevertheless, there are some challenges and barriers that make their health outcomes being optimal a challenge, and I'll get into that a little bit. To get into more granular data as far as African immigrants are concerned, again, Montgomery County, where I put in quotations our corporate office, we call it our support center, but where Adventist Healthcare is located, in the 2010 census, the African immigrant community came together and wanted to really be recognized not just as a globular group of Africans, but specifically by country of origin. And so with the U.S. Census in 2010, we were able to get some specific data as to country of origin. And so just to highlight what our biggest immigrant groups are from by country of origin for our African immigrants, Ethiopia and Cameroon have our largest percentages. And then, shocking to me, followed by my Nigerian brothers and sisters, coming in at third, tied with Sierra Leoneans, and then Ghanaians, Liberians, and Kenyans. But just to provide you with a little background about what our country of origins look like for African immigrants. And so, as mentioned, there are several barriers to care that exist for African immigrants, despite some of the great things that are going for the population, generally speaking. Limited English proficiency, which kind of stands on its own. Of course, if we went, for instance, to France and didn't know the language, we'd have some challenges. And so likewise, when African immigrants come to this country, if they don't have proficiency in the language, then they're going to have some challenges in accessing health care. Being unemployed or underemployed, or having insurance or not having insurance, definitely is going to affect the ability for an African immigrant to receive the services that they need to improve their health. Cultural differences as far as understanding what the health system looks like, how they can navigate it effectively, why it's important to go and seek preventative services as opposed to waiting to receive reactive services also presents a challenge as far as culture is concerned with healthcare. religious beliefs, if I have a faith or a religious background that I have certain dietary restrictions, maybe I fast often, that's going to prevent some challenges as far as me seeking and following the medical treatment that I'm prescribed. My immigrant status, an interesting story, one of our facilitators for this program often said that when she first came here, if there was ever a knock at the door, she was out in the back door while her children went to go answer it, because she was always so concerned about making sure that her status was right. And even though it was, she always still in the back of her mind was really concerned that some way, somehow, some paper has fallen through a crack, and so she's not legitimate and able to receive health care needs. And immigrant status continues to be a hanging balance for many of our African immigrant brothers and sisters. And then having supports and services that are culturally appropriate. Just because a service is meaningful for one group doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be meaningful for this group. And so Project Beat It comes along and kind of meets the needs of all of those barriers that we mentioned, but specifically through culturally competent training and culturally appropriate means is able to meet the needs of African immigrants as far as all of those barriers are concerned and so much more. Through the Office of Minority Health at the federal level, the Center for Health Equity and Wellness was approached about 3 years ago and tasked with these two specific goals as far as improving African immigrant health is concerned. The first being to develop a culturally competent curricula that's specific to healthcare providers, providing them with support and guidance on how to treat African immigrants in the three disease areas of type 2 diabetes, hepatitis B, and HIV and AIDS. Of course, we're also wanting to touch the community, touch the patient, and so we're also tasked with focusing on health education models that would help to increase disease management and knowledge and improve overall health for the African immigrant patient as well. The timeline of the project was about 20 months, and so unfortunately we couldn't change the world in 20 months, but we did our best to try. And for the first phase of this 20-month project, for about 8 months, we developed and laid the groundwork as far as building relationships with the community, developing an advisory board that helped us come together and inform us about how to be really savvy, if you will, about approaching the community, engaging the community, and getting them to be at the table to really make this project effective. They helped us develop the actual curricula so that it was appealing, so that it was appropriate, and helped us start the outreach activities as well during that development phase. During the second phase, we were able to actually implement the curricula for about 3 to 4 months. And then the last part of the project was actually going back, evaluating, seeing how these people, both patients and providers, were affected and able to maintain change in terms of the things that they were able to learn and incorporate into their lives. In terms of desired outcomes, the provider outcomes, which I've highlighted because that's kind of the focus of today's presentation, we wanted to see them have an increased awareness and a knowledge of culturally appropriate ways to meet the needs of their patients. We wanted to make sure that their discharge and intake procedures were going to actually lead their patients to be competent and compliant with their take-home methods, their prescriptions. And so we also wanted to make sure that the staff knew and were able to see some differences that were sustained as well, the healthcare providers. And then in terms of patient outcomes, we also wanted to increase their awareness and their knowledge of their health conditions and increase their adherence and reduce them coming back into the hospital for the same diseases, for the same, problems without a planned visit. And so how exactly do we bring together this three-phase project in this short period of time to make it effective? Again, we can't change the world, though we really did try. And we felt that the most effective part of this project was really getting the community involved, both the patient and provider community. And so I'll take a few moments to just talk about what we did. So we developed this project advisory board, which I mentioned earlier. We brought them in at the beginning, but they really stayed with us throughout this 20-month phase. And in fact, we still have very strong relationships with them as we try to keep this project alive. We recruited about 30 project leaders, community advisors, we call them. And out of those 30 people, 27 of them accepted our invitation. And of those 27 that accepted our invitation, 24 of them were actually African immigrants themselves, representing a myriad of different disciplines, as I've listed there. But an interesting fact about them being members of the community, as well as influentially engaged with the community, is the fact that they understood from both sides of the coin what the African immigrant experience is like. It wasn't just a matter of knowing and touching and working with the community, which is great and effective and important, but they understood. They'd walked the walk at some point. They knew what it was like I mentioned with that facilitator earlier. She knew what it was like to have the stress and anxiety of your immigrant status being questioned. She knew what it was like to really have these other things going on that might make it challenging for you to receive effective health care. So having these people at the table really is what drove this project forward and what made it successful. We met with them quarterly. We got their feedback on how to implement the curricula, how to touch the right parts of the community, ways to approach the community, because as all my colleagues can attest, there are different strategies. With some communities, you can just go in like a bull in a china shop, and that's how they want to be received. Other communities, maybe not. Maybe you've got to do some massaging. I think about my poor husband. He's African American, and just him engaging with my father to ask for my hand. Whoa, we won't go down that road. But it can be a very, you have to know how to approach the community. And so the advisory board was great about getting us those inroads, as they were either the gatekeepers or just able to know from their experience the best ways to make sure that we were well received with this project. And as we met with them both in person and via teleconference, they were just helpful, again, in helping us move this project forward and making sure that it was culturally appropriate. The other key part of this project was meeting in focus groups, both with the providers of care as well as consumers, to get their feedback, again, on effectiveness. Is this a curricula? Is this an approach that's going to work for you? If you hear something about this marketed in X way, are you going to want to be there? Or is there some tunnel? Is there some way that we can make this better? And so we had focus groups that were segmented by provider and patient, as well as by the different disease focus areas, both for the chronic diseases versus the infectious diseases. And as we met with them and had them review the curricula, had them look at our marketing strategies, they were able to give us some good feedback, help us know how best to implement the curricula, and again, even market for the curricula, which ended up being about a 90-minute content and with some pre and post questionnaires and some engaging activities. Unfortunately, I cannot provide that for you today, but if you follow with me, we can definitely get you on the right path to take a look at the curricula. It's a great, great, great tools that a lot of people found to be effective. And so to speak to that, some of our highlights included that we were able to have 15 training sessions. Again, looking at the provider side, because that's the focus of today's presentation, we initially were contracted with the Office of Minority Health to just hold 8 sessions with providers. But as the word spread, not only were we able to hold 7 more additional trainings, but we were able to go beyond the D.C. area. We're able to partner with the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center and hold 3 trainings there with their staff, physicians and residents, and get them at the table to really see how they could effectively meet the needs of their patients. It was really interesting. As we started this project and it got off the ground, it seemed as though people were just hungry, just sitting at the table, but nothing on their plates. And then we came and they're like, yes, we're ready to feast. We've been waiting for something like this. It was really interesting when we went to Pittsburgh, which is becoming a little unknown fact to me, a major hub for African immigrants and refugees. They were begging, dying to know just some basic approaches for how to touch the community in a way that would be effective, but also culturally appropriate. And so as we were able to meet with them in person, and the word spread even further and have some webinars, we were able to touch almost over 1,000 healthcare providers throughout the U.S., but primarily in the Washington, D.C. and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania area. Last year, we were able to present some preliminary data on this information, and we've also been featured in news both nationally and internationally, something we're really proud of as we've just talked about this project and tried to get some traction and get some visibility. Ultimately, these efforts coming together to really improve the health of a people, of a continent, one person at a time. And I want to take this moment now to turn the time over to someone who can tell the story, the success story of Project Beater better than I can. Hopefully we've got an internet connection working. Do you know if the internet's working in this room? No? That is too bad. So you have to follow up and watch this great vignette, but I'll briefly summarize, but she does such a great job. One of our great success stories is Fende Bakossa, who is a native of Cameroon, West Africa, and she tells a story. She's a registered nurse, actually, so someone who understands, from a health perspective, all the things you should be doing, but yet she was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and she talks about the effect that Project Beat It, working with a trained provider, is able to have in her life, how through that culturally competent interaction, not only did she improve her health outcomes, but she was really able to see a difference in her life and in the way that she was able to then interact with her family, as she was able to meet with a trained provider, someone who's been through this Project Beat It training, and able to see some drastic life changes. And I don't want to give any spoilers out, but I highly encourage you to go and see this 3-minute vignette that we created on Fende's story. And then I, of course, want to acknowledge our funders at the Office of Minority Health for their support, and not just their financial support, which of course is key, but truly the people listed, the top three people listed on this slide are people who represent the Office of Minority Health. They really did walk the walk with us and talk with us in terms of implementing this project, and so we're really grateful for that, as well as the advisory board for the project and our acute care hospitals. We're really great about helping provide space, advertising, and really getting the message out for Project Beat It and its effectiveness, and then some local community partners as well. And I think I've stayed under 12 minutes. Yay! Thank you.
Thank you for this wonderful presentation. And now it's time for us to have a discussion. Hopefully, some of you have learned some of those items while you were listening.